Tell us about the antenna rest empire and what's different about it on the real UHF channel 56. It's a little bit lower in gain, a little bit different in tilt, a little bit different in scalloping. This is DB. Tell us your name, sir.
Good evening, Dick. Everyone on the net. Kilo Delta 2, Bravo Delta. Name is John. No, it's just as Eric was mentioning earlier. They changed antennas, I think, just before or around the time of the start of the Olympics. And things didn't work out too well. I'm 42 miles south of Empire, and I lost, well, I guess for a while they had nothing on Empire or very low power signals at Empire, so I basically lost everything except the stations that had separate antennas from the main community antenna. And also, I think Channel 7 might have switched over to 4 Times Square. But my real reason for butting in on this conversation is talking about broadband antennas for UHF use. I have an old radio electronics magazine from July 1981. And there's an article in this magazine where a test was done of commercial UHF television antennas for an FCC study. And this testing was done down at the Georgia Institute of Technology. And one of the conclusions of this article, they tested a whole bunch of different manufacturers of antennas. They looked at gain, they looked at bandwidth, they looked at cost. And one of the antennas that came out on top was a WineGuard KU420. This is characterized as a 4-bay bow tie in front of the screen. Now this was done back in the days when UHF was channel 14 through 83, 470 to 890 megahertz. This particular antenna, the minimum SWR across that band was 1.0 to 1. The maximum SWR over that bandwidth was 2 to 1. Wow. The minimum gain, 9 dB over dipole. Maximum gain, 13.1 dB over dipole. So, nice flat response, very good match, and very cheap at the time, $9.44. But I think if you do some Googling, you'll find many different clones of this particular type of antenna. It's basically 4 V-type poles stacked vertically in front of the screen. And it has nice wide bandwidth, good gain, and a lot of people are using this type of antenna for DTV operations. And a lot of people are building them by themselves, you know, instead of buying commercial. K2RW and the TechNet from KD2B.
Are you using one of those antennas, John, or are you thinking of acquiring one or building one?
I'm using one in the attic. I'm using a Yagi for one channel, for a New Jersey Network channel on channel 43. That's an 8-element Yagi pointed out to the west. I'm using this particular WineGuard antenna pointed north for everything coming off Empire. And occasionally, WGBH in Boston and some stations in Rhode Island and Connecticut, I'm willing to run an antenna too. If you look through the antenna engineering handbook, there's some information in that book, and I believe also in the antennas book by John Krause, talking about bow ties, performance of bow ties, the dimensions, depending on the frequency you're worried about, the gain in front of a screen, without a screen, when you stack two vertically, what kind of performance you get. It's a really nice little dipole, a bow tie. Nice bandwidth, relatively high impedance, so you can stack a couple vertically and still end up with a usable feed point impedance at the end of the array. K2RW in the TechNet from KD2BD.
Your individual dipole or bow ties, are they the wire kind that are skeleton bow ties or are they sheet metal kind? John, go ahead.
On the WineGuard antenna, they are the skeleton type. They're really V-dipole. That would characterize them as being V-dipole. I have experimented with some homebrew antennas using full solid metal dipole. And this is just for indoor use, so, you know, the construction is very flimsy. But what I did is I went to the dollar store and I picked up a couple of oven liners and cut the bow ties from those oven liners and put them in front of a piece of masonite that I connected or strapped on some tin foil to make a reflector, back reflector, and it works out quite nicely.
Is oven liner a kind of tinfoil that's heavier in grade? Give us a couple words on oven liner, and if that, I'm going to pick up the person from South Carolina. You first, John, go ahead.
So you put in the oven for cooking something larger, and there's enough material in there to cut a couple of bow ties out of. Oven.
Is that sold in ordinary supermarkets, or do you have to go to a special store for that?
Regular grocery store has that. Dollar store has, I think I purchased two for a dollar at the dollar store.
And they're called oven liners, and they look like a pie plate. Are they round or rectangular? Or how would I recognize them, and what brand name, John?
I guess they are rectangular. I guess they're maybe, I don't know. There's enough in there to cut at least two UHF bow ties out of. It's thin, it's, you know, it's paper thin aluminum, and it's, I guess it's made, really just made to be used once in an oven. But if you're careful with it, you can make some antennas out of it. K2REW and the TechNet from KD2BD.
Sounds like a handy material. The person from South Carolina, give us your call letters and name, and I think you had a question or a comment. My name is Dick, K2REW. Go ahead.
It's Curtis, and two, WWM. Yeah, I just wanted to comment on your net tonight, and been listening to it for a while, and the repeated trustee down here, that's on this particular frequency that I'm going through, he actually works over at Fox as an engineer. And what they did was they took one night on their nightly broadcast, and they brought the analog signal off, completely off the air, and showed the general population what they would actually be seeing on their screen. It was total snow. And there's an area that down here in South Carolina, they totally took off the analog signal. I don't know if it's still off or it was just a test trial. They must have got 150 phone calls that day. This was about 2 weeks ago. So, most of the signals, there's only one VHF station in downtown Columbia. That's Channel 10. And the NBC affiliates on 19, CBS 19. And Channel 10 is the NBC affiliate. CBS is on 35, and they run various signals through high def. You get how many channels they run with a bunch of relays. Beautiful setup they have, too. They put a lot of money into their system, public broadcasting. So, and Eric would love that. See what they actually did down here in Columbia. We have our monthly meetings down at the ETD facility. Dick, you should see this facility. It can blow Channel 13 away. Back to net into WWM.
Curtis, you said something that's ambiguous and I'm having trouble understanding it. You said they took the local channel, Fox, I think it was, off the air to show people what they would get. And they got 150 phone calls. They took it off the air. I don't know what that... Those are very ambiguous words. In other words, they fed it through cable instead of over-the-air broadcast. They turned off the broadcast over-the-air transmitter. They took it off the air. I don't know what that means. And then they showed people what they would get, and they got 150 phone calls. You're going to have to run that by again, because I'm missing, I hear the words, but I'm missing the concept. You got it, Curtis.
Okay, the 57 signal, they dropped it for like 30 seconds on the network broadcast to show an example. There's another area in South Carolina where they totally took the analog signal down. I'm not sure where. And there was a report in about 100 or so calls to various local stations. People was wondering why they weren't getting a TV signal. That wasn't in the Columbia area, that was someplace else. That was just a test. What they've been doing is to show the general public, just if you have analog TV, is that February 17th, there will not be a signal. Back to next, to WW.
Okay, I think I see what you're saying. In other words, they're trying to build a fire under these people to say, you better go out and get your method of digital television reception, whether it be cable TV, satellite TV, or a converter into your set. You better go correct, because ordinary analog over the air is going to cease to exist in roughly 4 months. That's what I think you're saying. Let's see, October, November, December, 5 months. So in 5 months, it's going to disappear, and you better start getting ready for it. And I think that they gave them a 30-second warning by taking it off the air and announcing ahead of time what they're going to do. Interesting. Okay, did we cover all the people who signed in who said they have questions? Did we forget anybody? If so, speak up now. K2LIW.
I can fill you in on more of that stuff, Dick, if you want.
Dick, just one more clarification.
Yeah, Eric, I do want to hear more about it. But Glenn first, because we're finishing up Glenn's question. Go ahead, Glenn.
Very good, Dick. One thing was about the receiver part. In other words, right now, I didn't know if Channel 2 is actually having problems, or the on-air, or possibly, you know, from Massapequa, I would think that from all the other channels seem to be coming in very strong with the antenna. And I think from what Eric is saying, it's on the same antenna. Probably most likely that the receivers, but getting multicast, better receiver might have different problems. Back to
that. I've got a question for you, Glenn, and that is, how many years ago did you buy your converter? That will give us a guess as to what technology might be. Is it the first, third, fifth, seventh generation? Second of all, have you run any experiments where you move, translate, and rotate the antenna that you try to receive channel 2 with digital television? If you change the orientation, XYZ location of the antenna, there's a chance it might suddenly come back in. I wonder if you had a chance to do that experiment. Over to you first, Eric. I mean, Glenn, sorry about that.
What I've found so far is this. On channel 56, there is a signal there. In other words, if I look at when it goes through the scan, or if I try to manually scan the channel, I can see a signal there. It looks like it's going across. It looks like it's a large amplitude signal that you know, within the bars, but it just doesn't, the receiver doesn't decode it. And I believe it's the first generation. It's like one of the very, very first ones that took them out when they first started reaching.
But when you take your antenna, where you're getting this reasonably strong signal, and translate the antenna X, Y, and Z, and rotate it up and down, left and right, you're changing the magnitude, phase angle, time delay, everything of the multicast, you may find a magic location where the antenna suddenly starts performing on that channel. I wonder if you had a chance to try that experiment yet, Glenn. Go ahead.
Yes, I have, Dick. As a matter of fact, not only that, I've tried different antennas, not only position, height, direction, up, down. Nothing seems to be working. This happened about a month ago. Then again, maybe it's just a failure in the box itself. But there again, I've never seen one channel here. But yeah, I've tried pointing in every direction with three different antennas. As a matter of fact, it was a couple of bow tie elements would actually be going to the best in a fixed direction. I don't even really have to move it. If I just point basically towards Empire State, I get all the channels that I need. And all the other channels in other directions are just super effective.
How old is it?
Eric, I would say that the receiver's got to be close to 10 years old now.
Or is it a DCC-100 or something?
It's marked Motorola. I can't find a model number on it anywhere. But it's Motorola. It's a silver front face. And it's just, I can't describe it. I tried to find a model number on it, but I can't find one.
Do you know there's a black hole on Division Street in Massapequa for Channel 56? Have you heard about that one, Glenn?
The problem is on my street, I don't know anybody who's really using you know, trying to receive it off air. So I was trying to compare somebody who was nearby that might be able to see if there's a problem. But I just find it odd. It's, there again, it could just be that the people failed. So that could be no problem.
That was a joke on my part. Eric, wait for the beep then, and tell us anything you want to about all of the above.
Alright, you really ought to get a modern receiver if your antenna will behave like something you've not experienced before. This generation equalizers do amazing things. Anyway, getting back to what the other gentleman was saying, did you know that in Wilmington there is no longer any analog television reception? That was the test city where they turned off all the analog stuff. And they had their share of problems. There are also some people in the past, which I think the other gentleman was referring to, where they turned the analog transmitters off for a little bit and put a message up on the digital to see how many people were actually watching the digital. But they got to follow some people who were on cable, of course, and stuff like that. But Wilmington, if you're actually interested in reading about it, go to the FCC website. Mr. Cropps gives a nice long dissertation of what needs to be taken care of, because they got lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of phone calls, people having trouble, not having television, not being aware that they had to make their receivers research channels and all sorts of weird stuff. So it's not going to be a very happy transition, I'll tell you that. K2RWKE2, guys.
Yeah, give me a few more words on Wilmington. Okay, they discontinued all analog television, went over to purely digital. I presume they gave plenty of warning to the populace, so in theory, there was a good distribution of digital television demodulators scattered around the town. And I think you're saying a significant number of people are unhappy. They were unhappy because of pilot error. They didn't know how to reprogram the digital converter in order to find the new channel, or because of multipath or local impulse noise from their equivalent of Long Island Power Authority. What do you believe was the nature of the grief that they were suffering from your point of view, Eric?
I suppose I could read you certain lines of Mr. Cox said, which is one of our FCC commissioners. You know, he brings it up to, like, an action item. The commission should conduct field tests in various markets, focusing on DTV reception issues. These tests would examine such issues as digital cliff effects, whether consumers are able to receive it all, or any of the stations receiving the analog with their existing antenna set up, or they need to move their antenna or buy a new one, et cetera, so on and so forth. And all of these things where communities would be at risk. Ramp up the FCC call center. While many consumers have no difficulty transitioning to digital, others have it not so easy. Here's some of the problems. They find installation technically daunting or physically difficult. They may properly install a converter box, only to find out they can no longer receive one or more stations they were able to receive an analog. In Wilmington, 1,536 residents called the FCC or the local broadcaster or cable operator for help in the first 2 days following the switchover. And he goes on to say, extrapolating from this number is dangerous, especially since, let me write it up, the percentage of the national Wilmington households that rely exclusively on over-the-air service is about half of the national average. Consumers nationally will not receive intensive on-the-ground outreach that Wilmington residents receive. And the relatively flat terrain in Wilmington may not reflect the reception issues in other markets that will experience. And he goes on to blah, 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 blah. But he does say in the beginning that he appreciates your efforts and the public service to the people of Wilmington for taking the idea of a full-scale test market and making it a reality. Union. They work really hard at getting people to put this stuff in their homes.
Wow. 1,500 phone calls in 2 days to me is significant. Wow. Now, here's a guess on my part. if a significant percentage of the population in Wilmington had previously come to tolerate a very ghosty, snowy picture on their particular television or set, or their particular either rabbit ears on top of the set or a yucky antenna on the chimney of the house, they had tolerated a fairly ghosty, snowy picture in the past. Because they had never seen anything better, to them that was good enough. They could hear the sound, they could make out enough of the picture, they knew what was going on when it comes to the news broadcast, or their favorite soap opera, or whatever. And that kind of reception in analog, when you suddenly flip over to digital, could well be below the cliff effect. Is that a possible guess as to what could have been happening with a certain percentage of that population? Back to you, Eric.
It's a multitude of things. I mean, one of the points that he makes is that educate consumers on DTV troubleshooting, including antennas, and the need to rescan converter boxes and sets. You know, a lot of the issues were those things. Some were antenna functionality. You know, there's some antennas that just don't work well because they're very bumpy and analog, you don't see anything. But digital becomes a problem. Stuff like that's going to pop up. I mean, it's an imperfect world, but one day it'll be perfect, but it ain't there yet.
Okay, therefore, from that experiment, I think you and I can sit here, Eric, and make a guess that February 17, 2009, when all analog television, per se, over the air ceases to exist, a significant percentage of the population is going to be gnashing their teeth and making phone calls. Is that a reasonable assumption?
Yeah, I would say so. And the place where it's going to happen the most will be in the city. Because the populace in the city, one of the large segments of the population, especially these days, is there's a large number of poor people. And poor people don't buy cable. They have rabbit ears. And it's their babysitters. So, yeah. There's going to be a lot of grief in that department. As far as the folks out in the middle of nowhere, they're probably using satellite anyway.
Okay. And there's no easy way to get around that. I mean, here, Wilmington or some other city down there in South Carolina did this test by temporarily disconnecting analog and hoping people would watch digital for a period of time.
You know, actually, if you're interested in knowing about what people are doing, there's a website called the AV Forum. And, AVS Forum, I'm sorry. Alpha Victor Sierra Forum. And all over the country, from the very first people who bought their very first receivers. You know, it's a bulletin board blogging site. You can get a sense of what's going on in any part of the country. As far as digital television, or any kind of video audio file kind of thing.
Yeah, repeat that, sir. Was it Alpha Victor Sierra Forum? And what does that stand for, Eric?
Well, as far as I know, it's AV Forum, AVS Forum. What can I tell you?
Okay. Audio, video, system forum or something like that. Alpha Victor Sierra Forum. And if I Google those words, you're saying I'll find out an awful lot of the current status of digital television reception. Anyone with any further questions or comments, give me a call letters right now.
Kilo Delta 2, Bravo Delta.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, just a note to you guys, to Glenn. If you do get to the AVS forum and look at the New York OTA, over the air, section of that, you'll see there's a lot of people who have had trouble receiving WCBS DT in recent months. So it's Glenn, it's not your receiver. GQRW and the TechNet from KE2BD.
What's your guess, John, as to what percentage of the people, how many miles from the station, are getting marginal or not very good reception on channel 56?
Oh, that depends. There are some people who are pretty far out who are still able to get reception, and there are some others who are much closer in who are having trouble. Before this antenna change took place, point, I'm 42 miles south of Empire. I could pretty much do anything for an antenna and get that station come through. And my thinking was that, you know, the analog is on channel 2, so they probably have the greatest operational range, the greatest coverage range from New York, so I would imagine that they would probably have the highest, or one of the highest ERPs for the digital transmission. And it always seemed to be that that was the strongest DTV signal I was receiving, but not anymore. I haven't checked today, but I was receiving it last night. I was receiving everything last night, but some of the signal strengths have changed. They've bounced up and down a little bit. Channel 11 used to be a weaker signal, and now it's one of the stronger ones. So things have changed. One of the discussions on the ABS forum was that people were saying that some panel antennas have been installed on Empire to do some fill-in work close into the New York City area. So it seems, if that's true, it seems as though maybe they're putting some lower power, they're just filling in some of the shadow areas close to the Empire State Building. And maybe people who are close in are receiving multipath due to reception from both of those antennas. They might be getting some reception difficulties as a result of that. K2RW in the TechNet from KB2BD.
KB7UV.
KB7UV, recognized. Give you in a second. You're in Seagirt. You're 42 miles south of Empire. And you're getting pretty good reception of 56. Glenn, KC2QIQ in Massapequa is roughly 30 miles, maybe 25, airline from Empire. And the terrain between him on the South Shore and Empire is direct line of sight. In other words, if he stood on the roof of his house with a telescope, I'm pretty sure he would see the top 200 feet of Empire at least. So his lack of reception is a little bit difficult to explain. But that's due to scalloping. It's an awfully deep scallop. We'll get back to that in a second. KB7UV, I think it was. Start off with your name, sir, and your question or comment. K2RIW, my name is Dick.
Hi, Dick. I haven't been here in years, but I was an original on this net way back when. This is Andy, KB7UV. I'm currently visiting. Actually, we'll be moving back to the area in about a month. Comment I want to make is that I'm not familiar with the DTV assignments here in this market, but if you're watching a 56, I believe it's going to be going away. If I'm not mistaken, everything from 51 up goes away on the 17th of February. And many of the stations are probably going to be jumping back to their VHF channels. I know that the station I was working at, Houston, is on, I believe it's 39 right now, and jumps to 13, back to 13 when the analog goes off. It's going to be digital on VHF channel 13 on February 17th. TechNet, KBWDX.
I'm going to break to a different subject for a second, Andy. You're the first visual contact that I've had. You're now living in Houston. A hurricane went roaring through there real recently. Give us a couple of words as to, from your point of view, what that hurricane was like. Over to you, Andy.
Well, weird situation for me. I was news operations manager for the ABC station in Houston, but that association ended about a week and a half before the hurricane hit. So I was actually in New Orleans partying instead of living at the TV station during the actual hurricane, but I came back shortly afterwards and I helped out at some of the points to do some radio communications and the like. Galveston is flattened. The Bolivar Peninsula, which is just to the east, the ship channel is in even worse shape. Houston, last I heard, there's still a lot of people without power, probably hundreds of thousands. A good friend of mine hasn't had power back yet. She's been using my apartment while I'm out of town as her alternate office space. A huge number of traffic lights are not functioning, and so they're all four-way intersections. It is a mess. But also want to remind people that I believe 2 million people without power way inland in the country as the storm continued along its path. So this was a real whopper, KBWA.
Okay, from what I'm hearing from you, Andy, it's going to take a number of months for Houston to recover.
hearing from you that Galveston is not going to recover in 2 years. That's a rough guess on my part. Am I in the right ballpark, Andy?
I would say so. And even then, it might take longer. Something for people historically to keep in mind. The year 1900, there basically wasn't much of a Houston at all. Galveston was the big city and port on that portion of the Texas coast. It got hammered by the hurricane of 1900. They didn't use names back then. And as I understand it, 6,000 died. Remember, there was no notification due to satellite back then. There was no radio. There was no way to evacuate. People just got hammered. And due to the destruction of Galveston at that point, Houston became the port. They dredged the ship channel, and Houston fell in large part to get further away from the coast. Galveston is going to take a long time. Bolivar Peninsula even longer. Suburbs south of Houston are going to take a while. It is a significant mess there, a real significant mess. I really can't say how long for anything in particular, but it is not, it's not like a snowstorm. KB70 event.
Someone recently sent me a number of photographs that were taken from the Galveston area, and some of those seaside homes, you would look down a line of them and you would see a half mile of what I think used to be homesteads. I could see the equivalent of what I think was a slab foundation, but nothing else was there except one single house on stilts, concrete stilts. It seemed to be standing essentially unharmed when everything around it was absolutely gone. I wonder if you've seen that photograph, and if so, what in the world did that guy do for the construction of that particular house? You saw that photograph, Andy. Go ahead.
I didn't see that particular photograph, but I did see some aerials, and I saw, I believe, probably the same house, and I believe it was steel-reinforced concrete pilings, steel-reinforced construction of the home itself. There are companies that advertise steel buildings out in that part of the country, and I wouldn't be surprised to find out that that's what that was. And there are areas where there are miles and miles of just destruction. I didn't actually go down there, and I didn't watch all that much of the television for a lot of reasons, so I really can't get too much better description, but devastation, and also, still problems with food distribution to a lot of people, no power, issues with people's health problems, hygiene and the like. I will tell you though, Houston as a community stepped up for Katrina to help the evacuees, mainly from New Orleans. And those who have are definitely helping those who do not have at this point. There is good community spirit there. And the Ham Radio community came together, helped out with the points of distribution, and continued along with things that continued at churches and community centers after FEMA kind of said goodbye. KB78.
Can the Houston local television station anticipate what's going to happen? There's going to be a decrease in revenue for the coming months, and they were cutting back on staff. Is that approximately what could have happened?
No, not at all. That's not what affected my situation. There have been layoffs at the other stations. The business broadcast, television broadcast business is really hurting. Nowhere near as badly as it will be soon, but don't forget it's driven by advertising. The economy starts tanking, people aren't buying commercials. For the most part, the automotive industry, which is the biggest advertiser, in a lot of the country, it is 50% of all broadcast, the television broadcast advertising. They are way cut back to almost nothing in most of the country. In Houston, they drop back quite a bit, but not that much. Furniture cuts back a lot. They're number two in much of the country as the advertiser. So people have been, stations are not refilling positions. Stations are cutting back in that area, and I'm sure, I know throughout the country, I don't know to what extent here in New York at this point, but network level has been seeing cutbacks at ABC. I don't know about any other ABCW venues.
Thank you, Andrew. Good information. I heard a very noisy OTH, I think it was. Give us your full set of call letters and names, sir.
Yes, this is N2ODH. You got Ken out here, Kilo Echo, NC, Quick New York.
Okay, go ahead with your question or comment, Ken.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask the gentleman, which way do you see the television station business going in the near future? Just listening to a little bit there, and there was going to be some cutbacks and layoffs, so just off the top of your head, which way do you think they're going to be going?
I'm guessing the trend doesn't look super encouraging. Is that true, Andy?
I would tend to agree. It's advertiser-driven, and it also has had to make expensive outlays for DTV, for HD, for the digital transmission facilities. I mean, it's been costly, and also it used to be basically a press upon which one could print money. So the margins that are expected by the owners, shareholders, managers, boards of directors, they expect incredible margins. So cost cutting is definitely something that I think should be anticipated as likely. With the whole economic thing going on right now, things are not as comfy as they used to be, let's put it that way. KTRAW and the next is WWA.
Thank you for all that inside information, Andrew. Eric, lucky for you, you're not dependent on advertisers per se. However, you are dependent on the viewers making contributions. And when people are pulling in their horns because they think a not-so-desirable economic situation is going to exist for the near future, my guess is that affects you in a different way. They have some, and by the way, all of that you heard, comment on any of it, Eric, KE2EJ, K2LIW.
K2LIW, K2EJ. Hey, it affects all of it. Although entertainment generally is affected less when the economy goes down. If anything, it's people will sit at home and watch television. And they will actually reconsider policy of group up. But, viewers like you is not the only place you get money. So, the commercial underwriters, the underwriting, which is the price word for commercial, the underwriters get the thing at the beginning and to the end. So, they get their few minutes into their money. We're affected just like everyone else is. But, the reality is, if you're not talking about a network and you're owned with a network affiliate, but you're owned by a small broadcast group, the name of the game is to lower your expenses. And what's the easiest way to lower your expenses? Oh, well, let's see, we've got a news studio. Oh, let's see, we've got three cameramen. We've got an audio guy. We've got director of TV. Oh, well, let's put some robots in there. Let's see, we've got three cameras now that the director can reach over and move the handles and use the predefined shots, and oh, and the director can sit in front of the switcher and do the switching, so you don't need a TV either. Oh yeah, and let's see, what else? The director can roll tape. So, yeah, it's the local station, it's really hard because, like, We're doing a show called World Focus. The director is the show. There's a director, an audio guy, and a utility on the floor that's the AP, you know, the audio assist and everything else. That's it. Plus the talent. There you go. K2IW, K2J.
K2J.
Okay, yeah. Go ahead, Ken.
Okay, yeah. I'm really bad with the cold, but the gentleman that was just speaking, I was just wondering, in terms of cutbacks, so they're gonna have like one guy doing one or two people doing the job of five as it takes.
Yeah, I think that question is directed to you, Eric. Is one or two people gonna be doing what used to be done by five people? Is that the trend?
Very much so. And it's very much in progress. All over the place. Not just in any one particular location. You know, that thing, you don't have to pay a salary. You don't have to pay... You remember, a salary is not what a company pays. That's only part of it. And it's the insurance and the this and the that and all the nice health programs and, you know, making sure your human resources department has something interesting to do. You save a lot of money when you do that. Yeah. And also changes the quality of your production, but if you're talking news, which is pretty much what most local facilities produce, if anything, it saves them a whole lot of bread. But, yep, even master control. It used to be that one master control operator would operate one master control. Now one master control operates 10 master controls. And in the case of NBC, they don't have any master controls in their satellite stations. They're all in New York. K2RW, K2J.
KB7UA.
UB, go ahead.
Yeah, for a glimpse at what's happening, a lot of stations do a web search for Grass Valley Ignite. Ignite is a software hardware system. It's what we call Parker Vision turned into. We're basically the director and the producer do everything. Don't need anybody else. You don't need a Chiron person. You don't need a live graphics person. You don't need a separate audio person. You don't need camera people. You just have the director and the producer. K2RW, KBWA.
You're drawing a somewhat bleak picture there, Randy. It sounds to me like the quality is going down a little bit. The salaries are going down a whole lot. Therefore, the project, the whole process is becoming a skeleton crew. And, Eric, do you think that that can remain indefinitely or just for this particular dry period? Do you think they will learn to live with that kind of a process where everything is done by remote control? Over to you, Eric.
That didn't just start. That's been going on for years. You know? Now think about it. We're going from tape to paperless. Right? And most of the facilities around town are paperless. What does that mean? It means you feed it in once and forget about it. You never have to put your hands on the tape machine again. It's all managed by computers and playlists and automation systems. So there's a whole lot of people you don't need there. You only need the guy to put it in the first place. This has been an ongoing process over the last 10. I mean, there's really been emphasis on it since computers have invaded the broadcast industry in the way that it has. It used to be it took a room full of stuff to have an edit room. Now all you need is a laptop. So the technology has played a large role in it. And, you know, software that's device-specific or application-specific just doesn't appear by magic. Somebody's figuring they're going to make some money doing it, so... That's why it's there. Back to you, Dick.
Speak to K1.
Hello, record guys. Eric, is the real broadcast now taking place from one super hard drive system? Is that what's really supplying the material at the instant of broadcast? Back to you, Eric.
Well, in New York, I don't know of any stations that run anything from tape anymore. As far as, like, on-air goes, I mean... except for when we're doing something live, 13 and 21 all coming off of 120 gigabyte drives that's put together in a 7 cluster node, which is a heck of a lot of drives. It actually stores like 50, 60 days worth of material. Then there's another server that's got like 20 days worth of high definition material. So what you were seeing on the air these days, it left tape a long time ago if it ever even got there in the first place. So that's kind of the way it is.
And I presume that material gets to you by way of a satellite link?
Some stuff. Actually, you gotta remember, we generate a lot of stuff, more than other stations do. Directly 13. So, some stuff comes in on tape, they get put in the service, some stuff comes down to the satellite, like news all goes down to satellite every night. Just like, all the other newscasts that go out in real time, that stuff comes down by satellite. And also, the promos and things that are done by other people that are not being part of your schedule, they'll actually be sent down actually in a number of different ways now. Either you'll get it video over satellite, or more and more, they'll send you a file that goes into your server and plays directly. Automation is an interesting thing here. K2RWK, good guy.
And 2H.
Go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, I was kind of in the process of trying to put together a TV station, so I'm just trying to see where things are going. So, I mean, I'm thinking about getting a couple of terabyte hard drives and just pack it up that way, because apparently, like you said earlier, the tape apparently is disappearing, so unless you have an upbox or something to download the pre-recorded tape onto the hard drive, which, as you said earlier, just put everything on the laptop and working from there.
Are you thinking of setting up a broadcast station from Endicott, New York?
Yeah.
This is going to be a small local broadcast or something that's network affiliated?
Well, it's a small local broadcast. I guess I'm trying to build my own network.
And you were lucky enough to find the funding to do all that, because my guess is the startup on that is a significant number of shekels. Is that true?
Well, that's what they've been telling me, but I know a few engineers, and we're just shuffling through the paperwork, so there may be some opportunities there.
You're looking to do low power or ultra no license, no power?
No, we're thinking about low power.
Is Endicott one of the areas that, from your point of view, Kent, is not being well served, and therefore there's a definite need for another outlet?
Well, I would think so. I mean, I've been there a few years, so just watching the way the areas kind of change. I guess that's what they did before IBM showed up, so I guess they're just going to revert back to it.
All right. Are you implying that you want to start a low-power station, an LV station? If that be the case, there's a lot that goes into that. And it's not so easy, but it can be done. There's an old guy by the name of Dick Bogner that does it just for fun.
What's his name again?
Dick Bogner, B-O-G-N-E-R. Manufacturer of FM antennas for like 50 years, but he's retired from that business.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to look him up and see if he has any information to offer in that area.
But, there's a whole process of just getting a license, so if you want to do something legitimate, put up a garden lot analog station. By the way, you can say analog, the low power stations are analog, and we'll stay that way for 2 more years or 3 more years, I forget what it is. But, you need to find yourself a good lawyer in Washington that knows all about how to, coax that stuff. And there's also filing windows, and I don't happen to know when one is going to open again. So, you need to do your homework if you really want to do that kind of thing.
Eric, if somebody invested in analog materials right now, which is useful for the next 2 years, and assumption you can get all the licensing done just right. Is that a worthwhile investment when the material, when the hardware will become obsolete in 2 years and has to become digital? Do you think that's a reasonable investment? Over to you, Eric.
Well, at the point that they have to become digital, as you're aware, things get manufactured, costs come down. And the cost of the coders is slowly coming down. I mean, the amplifier of the TV transmitter, whether it's 1,000 watts or 30 kilowatts or 60 kilowatts, it's the same thing. You just need a different exciter at the back of it. And, of course, you pre-tune it to the weirdness of whatever the amplifier that you have is. But, yeah, it's not the kind of thing where you're going to obsolete yourself, so to speak. But because there will be low-power digital, too, which will be interesting.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking about by the time everything goes through. I think we'd be a low-power digital station because, I guess, I'm not sure about the Windows engineer looking into that, but I believe there's, half of 2012 to become digital.
If I had 300 grand to invest right now, Eric, could I buy enough hardware and set up a 1 kilowatt low-power station? And am I likely to find enough advertisers in the Intercon New York area to make that a positive cash flow? K2EJ, K2LIW.
Well, that all depends upon how good you are at doing research and how much of a good business person you are. People won't put money into something unless you can prove you've got an audience. And if you look at most of the low-power stuff out there, it's either home shopping, religious, or various different religious organizations. Well, the occasional coup like Dick Bogner.
Now, when Dick Bogner sets up a station, he does it, what kind? Is it the home shopping, or is it locally produced news? What is the main intent of a Bogner-like operation? Thank you, Eric.
I think his main intent is to have fun. But he's got a place in the city where they produce a lot of stuff. And they put some of it on his stations all over the place. But I think he does a mix of stuff. He's even got a low-power station. Now, this is the killer. This is how weird the guy is. Okay, some FM radios in the car will tune to 87 and not start at 88. Well, what is it, too? He puts up a Channel 6 low-power station on top of the Citibank building in Queens. He puts up bars, and then he puts all his audio on there for people to listen to in the car.
Yeah, I've often driven around the United States and listened to Channel 6 audio on the low end of the FM. Ken, you probably have some further questions here.
I've been listening up and down the band, there appears to be some stations on the low end of the band and there because that you can actually hear the audio from stations.
On a local Channel 6, I think, for your fans. I know that K2KY wanted to make some comments. I hope we're finally getting back to you. Go ahead.
Okay, so I was going to comment a little earlier when you mentioning what's happening. Some of my friends are involved in the book, and one of them in particular works for an FM station here in New York. You have no idea what things they've looked into, seeing that they are basically involved with one of the Wall Street companies that collapsed. There was somebody financially involved with them. So now, since the collapse of all these banks and whatnot, 120,000 people will lose their jobs on Wall Street. And it's going to really trickle down to this, especially in the work here. Because a lot of these broadcasts were supported by a number of companies that are no longer in existence now on Wall Street. And there is this place they're investigating what they're doing. They sit away basically to cut their office staff down tremendously by sending them home and only need a skeleton group in the office now, and it just has the rest of them working, the ones that do just the basic paperwork, work at home over the internet, And now he says it was things like the investigating, cutting the hours of transmission down, or even looking into things like reducing power. They don't know how he says they're going to squeeze, but boy, he says they got the clamps on. I heard this now from two or three people at the last meeting they took over.
It does sound like we're going into an interesting period. Wow. Anybody with any further questions or comments on all of the above, give me your call letters right now. K2LAW. Okay.
Like I said, I was just trying to get some basic information on it. Because I had some gentlemen that I was speaking to upstate. And they know a few guys down in New York. And he said there is a possibility of getting some Wall Street help with regards to, depending on everything goes through, there may be some. We'll just kind of go along with that. Is that too old?
Out of curiosity, Ken, do you have a local location on, say, a high mountain or a high building where the antenna can be located, where a zoning permit for the antenna can be obtained, where that location will give you reasonable coverage of a slightly mountainous area? That is a slightly mountainous area by my standards, and therefore there are going to be some dead zones in there where getting the broadcast signal into those dead zones can be a little bit difficult when you begin that investigation.
Periodically we've done some topographical studies, and Ingram Hill is one of the local big mountains up there that kind of separates the north from the south as far as radio signals are concerned in that area. So we're just doing some power. Power emissions and see how radio signal covers the area and the topo studies. And we have a few locations in mind. Right around the Broome County Airport, they're almost the same line as the Ingram Hill. But there's a lot more transmitters up on Ingram Hill because there's the local TV stations up there as well. The high power guy, you know. So that's kind of what we, you know, kind of got to deal with. Wait for the information to come through. I mean, you know, kind of working on that to see what kind of footprint we'll get out of that coverage in the valley.
Sounds like fun. And what's your guess, Eric, as to the available frequency allocation for that area? Do you think there's some blank channels that can be applied for, KE2EJ?
Well, I would probably suggest that it's become more difficult because the number of channels available has shrunk in the UHF. That's where it's easiest to put low power anyway. But it's not a question of what do you think is blank. It's a whole series of explorations that have to go on before you can even apply for a given channel, because you have to prove and get permission from adjacent and co-channel stations within, I think it's 150 to 200 miles of where you are. So there's a lot of work to do before you can even figure out what channel you'd want to apply for.
So you're saying if I chose a channel, I'm picking a number out of the air, channel 37, I'd have to find every channel 37 that's within 150 or 200 miles, prove to them that I'm not going to create co-channel interference for their particular service area, and get their permission to file an application with the FCC. Is that what you just told me?
Yeah, that's a little more complicated than that. That's simply put.